My GrowPass.com update, everybody. So in love with GrowPass right now. We just added standalone debit card and credit card signup transactions. So some people were struggling with PayPal. Their portal can be a little bit funky. So now you can sign up with PayPal or just a credit card or debit card. It's very secure. It's through WePay. Everything is functional. All the membership perks are awesome. They're up and running. I'm so happy with the content that we're providing. I'm so happy with the discounts we're providing. July 7th is our first live stream. You can ask Wolfman one-on-one advice, guys. This is it. This is your chance to talk to Wolfman. First Sunday of every month at noon. Check it out, mygrowpass.com. Now taking PayPal as well as credit card and debit card signups. Love you guys so much. Hope you have a great hump day in your grow. Best of luck to you all. Happy growing. Without further ado, enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Wouldn't you please tell a friend about the show? We sure would love that. And give us a rating and review. Make sure you're subscribed. All those things that we love to see. Oh, what do we got today? We have Family Tree Seeds on the line. How you doing, Mr. Trees?
How you doing, Jordan? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing excellent, man. I'm excited to talk to you. You've got some cool stuff to talk about in the grow world, in the seed world, and also give us some nice, regale us with some nice stories of the SoCal grow-off we'll be talking about here in a second. So why don't we start with your history, your growing history? You're not exactly... You didn't enter the cannabis industry from the cannabis side, let's say. You've been growing in the dirt far before your love of pot took over, yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I started growing very, very young. All things, you know, vegetables, herbs, citrus trees. I come from a long line of family farmers, alfalfa, cotton, things like that. So I always kind of had a hankering for being in the dirt. When I was very young, about, I don't know, 15 or 16, I started popping some seeds that I got out of some, you know, Mexican swag weed or whatever I could steal from, you know, my mom or whatever was around. Whenever I found a seed, I put it in the ground and away it went. So I started, I lived pretty far away from where I like to hang out. So I started trading people little plants to give me rides places. And that's kind of how my seed business kind of started. And how my love of kind of sharing genetics started happening. So
that's really cool. That's really cool. So, your time in the garden, was that something that your parents kind of instilled in you, or was that your own, of your own volition?
That's, you know, my mother, she always liked growing things. She was always very good at growing things, flowers and herbs and things. We always had a garden or a project in the backyard that we were doing, make it look nice, you know, from, you know, little herb gardens or fairy gardens or whatever. We were always growing some plants wherever we were. But really, I always had the bug. I always kind of looked at the plants and nature as a whole and kind of spoke to me. And I've always been the one that kind of just took gardening as my number one, the numero uno. Everybody nice. Else is kind of sidebar, but I was full on into Mother Nature.
That's cool. That's really cool. As far as cannabis growing or just growing in general, I'd imagine, I know that you're into soil biology. Are you a super soil organic grower? Do you use any nutrients? How does that work?
So I'm a disciple of Dr. Elaine Ingham. So mm-hmm. I'm very microbe oriented. You know, the F to B ratio, fungal to bacterial ratio. I teach in my, you know, my day job, you know, horticulture with fruit trees and things like restoring soil, working with the circle of life, things like that. So I'm not big into any major nutrient lines or adding a lot of artificial nutrients or
counteracting that natural biology.
Exactly. I kind of want to enhance kind of Mother Nature. I'm always like the forest floor approach, where I kind of want to mimic Mother Nature as much as possible. Get that forest floor going, work that biology, and get my F to B ratio pumping so that everything's even, everything's balanced, and I have good diversity and protection for my plants. Also get better nutrient uptake and more healthy, you know, fruits, vegetables, herbs, all the above.
All contained in the soil, or do you have any organic additives that you like to use?
You know, initially, if I'm building some soil, I'll use a good organic soil mixture of things. I like, if I'm going to buy a product, I find that, you know, Booze Blend or Malibu compost is one of my favorite types of things to buy. They have a potting soil, they have a compost, things like that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate their approach and their attention to detail. So if I was going to buy something along those lines, I would probably use a mixture and some compost or a good quality potting soil in that regard. And then I like to add, you know, some aloe, actual aloe chunks, maybe a little bit of insect frass if I have it lying around. Sometimes in the back of my truck, I got some, you know, additives for fruit trees and things, and I'll just kind of sift through there and see nice. What I got, and in the pot it goes. But, you know, overall, sometimes, a lot of the time I use lots of compost teas, Korean natural farming kind of techniques. Like of FPJ, I'll do, you know, a fermented, you know, plant juice or fruit juice or something like that, you know, real easy with brown sugar. And I'll just add that to my compost tea or in addition to my compost tea. But I'm big into just adding armies of microbes to a good system where they can live and be protected, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now that the KNF, talk to me about your strategy when it comes to that. Can you give out like a little recipe? Do you make it yourself, I assume?
Yeah, so like, you know, a good one that I kind of always do is your native weeds around your home. So not spending money. Using nature, they're very nutritious. They house a lot of local microbial, you know, communities on their leaves and in their root systems. So if you got some kind of local obnoxious weeds that are pretty lush and got some, you know, got some juice to them, some stalks and some juice, good leaf, good lush leaves, I like to use those. I like to use some aloe vera chunks in there in some cases, and then I have a moringa tree that I keep in my backyard. And the moringa tree is one of the most nutritious plants on planet Earth. And the leaves, every part of the tree can be used for something. But I use some of the leaves early morning. You collect it, you know, if you're doing it properly, you want to collect it just before first light where you got some good microbial material on that dew, on those new, fresh, little tender leaves. And I collect as many of those leaves as possible and do all of my harvesting of my products at that point anyway. Ooh. And then into a jar it goes. Smothered with brown sugar, some sort of organic brown sugar or whatever you can get from the, you know, the pantry or the store. And then after everything's good and coated with that, then you put a little, you know, half inch to an inch cap of brown sugar on the top of everything just to kind of encapsulate the whole little bugger. And then a little napkin or a towel or something over the top of the jar, maybe a rubber band just to hold it on. And then you put it in a cool, dark place. For, you know, a week, 5 days, mm-hmm. somewhere along the lines. And then it completely breaks down to this, you know, it's a third of what it was when it went in, and it's all this brown sludge. And then after that, you know, 5 to 7 day period, sometimes you can go 10 days. If you forget about it, it's not the end of the world. You know, I pull that sludge out and I kind of strain out that brown gold, and into the clean jar of just the brown gold it goes, and then you just use it a few drops at a time per gallon of water. Wow. I think it's like a, you know, 1 to 500 ratio, 1 to 1,000. You can be pretty nonchalant about it. You know, it's not super powerful, but it's extremely nutritious, and it's full of, you know, your native microbiology, and it's full of, you know, nutrition from the plants that you put in. I have a lot of purslane weed, which is a pretty nutritious weed that grows around my house. I use a lot of that in there sometimes, but it's kind of what's on hand added with some aloe, you know. Aloe is always good for everything.
That's really, really cool. I love that, man. That's really good advice. And I feel like the more diversity of input, the better. Even if you are a synthetic grower, that's something that I experienced in my past, which is, you know, alternating bloom enhancers works for a reason. I don't think it's any different when it comes to soil biology or human biology. You know, I think the more diverse sources of calcium that you can get, I think the better.
Absolutely, man. So. You know, the more fruits and vegetables you eat, the more diverse colors and sizes, the better your health is.
Totally.
The same way the plant, you know, nobody wants to eat cornflakes every day.
Totally. Sure. Yeah, you're right. You know? Mm-hmm. But hey, I wanted to touch on this story that we were discussing before we signed on air here. The SoCal Grow Off. Talk to me about what that was and your participation into it.
So the Grow Off is a science-based competition. Basically, everybody gets two mystery clones. So you get this, everybody gets the exact clone from the exact same mother plant.
But they don't tell you the strain. So you don't know any sort of proclivities or any sort of finickiness or anything.
Exactly. So you can't, you know, kind of know anything ahead of time, like, you know, what it likes, what it doesn't like, how you're going to deal with it.
And sorry to interrupt you, but you already revealed the strain to me. And now that I think about it, that's a dirty, dirty trick. That is a very finicky strain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want me to tell you now, you know?
Well, we'll reveal it when you're talking about people in your home.
Okay. Gotcha. That's absolutely right. So it's a science-based competition. Everybody gets the same plant. They don't tell you what it is. It's genetically, you know, tested to make sure that they're all verified and the same, all that good stuff. And you get a certain amount of time, you know, 4-5 months or something, depending on competition, to grow it however you want, using any inputs, any methods, anything you want. And then you submit it in the end. They test it for potency and terpenes, and they test it to make sure that it is the strain that they gave you originally. And the winner with the highest numbers takes the cake. And it's a serious competition. You know, a lot of big players, a lot of people who think they're good growers when they enter this competition. I think when I entered the competition, I saw a bunch of pictures. There was Kyle Cushman was in the competition. Who entered with us, Squints from the movie The Sandlot was in there. A bunch of people were in that competition, which is pretty cool. There was no shortage of talent.
Right, sure. Right. Now, are you talking a cash prize? You got a trophy? What's that look
cash
like?
Cash prize, trophy, and notoriety.
Plus, most importantly, I'd imagine, is that's what people are after.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Plus, you get a killer strain. So the strain that they choose is always a coveted strain. It's got, you know, good market value that is highly desired, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So you get all those types of, you know, perks in the end. Plus you get to know that out of all those people, you know, that you're one of the better growers or you're not one of the better growers.
That's exactly what people are after. So you get these clones, and you're probably not used to clones, I'd imagine. You probably grow from seed usually.
Well, I keep a lot of mothers and things for years.
Okay, right. So
I'm pretty good with clones.
Okay. New territory.
Clones of seed. Yeah, seed is definitely my priority.
Okay.
But yeah.
So you get those clones home, and does it start off well? Do you have a good start right away?
So, out of all the competitions, it had to be ours that kind of got foofed a little bit. After about a week or so of receiving the clones. We got a message and an update, a little video, and one of the guys had found root aphids on one of the clones, and that is an absolute death sentence, you know, for lots of people. You know what I mean? That's just not a fun thing to deal with. And I was like, oh my god, did mom have root aphids? I inspected him pretty good, and I put him in quarantine for a week beforehand, but I should have quarantined him for about 2 weeks. And what happened was, you know, some people had a really bad outbreak and couldn't overcome it. And it knocked out half the competition right away.
Wow.
Some had to fight it the whole town. Some used whatever they used and didn't have a problem. Some people didn't get them. So I was a victim. I definitely got handed a couple root aphids.
How'd you treat them?
When they found them, the grow off people are really awesome. They wanted to make everything right. It's a total bad situation. So they,
yeah, man, that's not cool.
Yeah. So they sent everybody, you know, complimentary Grand Evo and Regalia and a bunch of other stuff.
Okay.
Like that.
That's pretty cool then.
I don't use those types of things. I'm not familiar with using those types of things.
Thanks a lot.
I'm a fruit tree guy, actually. I don't hang out in hydro shops. So that is not, that's not my preference. So what I originally did when I brought them home is I put them in, the IPM. I gave them a little bit of a spinosad dunk on the bottom just to be sure. They were in rock wool. I never used rock wool, so I just gave them a little dunk with a little bit of spinosad in there. Mm-hmm. And then, potted them up, put them in quarantine for a week, put them into my main little chamber with a couple of my moms just to grow them up. The lights are better in there. And right when I did that, they busted out in my whole room. So I had an outbreak pretty bad. So I was battling. I was using some I always have rove beetles and like some predatory mites and a lot of beneficial insects and things like that, nematodes and things that usually do pretty good. So after I figured out what was going on, I lost a couple of coveted plants, which is a bummer. And I had to make cuts and get rid of a bunch of things and jump through all these hoops. But after I got it all kind of isolated, my beneficial program kind of took over. And I didn't have any problems like dealing and managing the situation.
Wow, nice. Must be
so
nice.
But every cut that I took from that point on had to go into a place that was more questionable because it was all time constraint, and I had other plants here and there, so I could never get out of the woods. So my entry was a cut of a cut of a cut that I made, and I had it completely acclimated to my system and the situation. It was all pest management, being taken care of that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that grown up really well. Things were going really well. I had all the other ones and grown them in a few different ways, even though they had their aphids. I didn't have the biggest problem. I'm used to dealing with pests in the field, and I was able to kind of keep everything at bay pretty easily, just, monitoring it. And I harvested one. It did not have the turp profile that I liked. I had the other one that was the cut of the cut of the cut. It was going really well inside the tent of the home, and everything was going excellent until about the last week of life for the plant, right before I was going to harvest.
Isn't that always how it goes?
Exactly. I thought I was completely out of the woods. My water pipe blew up in the wall, basically, in my home.
Just randomly?
Yep, just really have been leaking behind the wall or whatnot, near the spigot area in my bathtub.
That's the worst.
And we just had no idea that it was going on or it had happened or what. I still don't really know exactly what happened. But all of a sudden, I went into my kids' room, and there was all kinds of water on the floor in there.
That's the worst.
It was a pretty big deal, so I looked around and figured we spilled something and found out that it was actually coming through the wall, and the wall was starting to collapse. And all of a sudden, it wiped out four rooms in the back half of my house. And they had to tear out all the stucco, and I had to get it out of my house. And I've got this grow off plant, in the other part of the house, but it's so stinky that everybody's like, "Well, what's that smell?" As they're walking in, trying to get, I'm like, "Oh my god, man. I gotta freaking get this thing out of the house, and get this out of it. This is a problem." So, I got it, cut it down early, about a week early. We ended up going to a hotel and got my family all put together in a hotel, and I was going back and forth from the house. Basically, had to keep the grow off clone curing in my truck in Tupperware tins. And then any chance that I got where there was nobody around and I could break it out into a hotel room for a second, catch a second when everybody was gone, I'd hang it up in the closet or open up the jars, and it would just stink up the entire hotel room. Like, people were walking by, like, making faces.
Oh,
and stuff.
My God.
Oh, my God. This is terrible. the worst thing ever. And, it's great that it smells so good, but it's just so bad, the situation that was happening. So I finally get it, dry enough to the point where, I can kind of keep it sealed up. And I'm like, I got to get this thing turned in as soon as possible because somebody's going to break into my truck or the maid's going to find it. You know what I mean?
Totally.
It's going to be gone.
You're going to get rolled by some passerby.
So I'm like, I'm trying as hard as I can to get it packaged up. And I had to drive up to LA to drop it off. And it was just, it was an absolute nightmare. I got stuck. They closed at 5. I was in LA traffic, like, saying, please wait for me. I'm never going to be able to get here again. And they were awesome at the lab, and they let me make my submission. And I got all that stress off of my plate and got everything clean and out and done. And, kind of went that way. And then I ended up winning third place in terpenes, which was out of control.
Nice.
Cure process on planet Earth. And I ended up still doing really, really well in the competition. So,
wow. That's great.
It was awesome. It was all worth it in the end, Take home a little bit of respect and a huge
failure
in the end. I thought it was going to be a failure at that point,
And I bet you were probably more proud of the terpene finish than the potency finish. I'm sure.
Totally.
I'm sure a few years back, most of the growers would be more interested in the potency, but now it's a different story.
Yeah, she was no slouch. She was seventh place in potency, which is great. But I cannot believe that terpylene, it was high terpylene, which is nice, or a little bit of that terpylene, I should say, which is that chemine fuel-y smell, man. And it was beautiful.
And the strain was
a Dog Walker OG.
Dog Walker OG, which is really, really popular. I see it everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a greasy, greasy, greasy thing. If you're squishing it, it squishes double or triple the amount of, you know, rosin that a lot of the other strains that I've squished.
Interesting.
Do, which is pretty cool. It's a very greasy one. At least the one I got, you know, the way I do it is pretty awesome. It squishes like a beast.
Nice.
So, you know, I'm glad. I almost lost a lot of those. I had to get rid of all that stuff because the root aphids and all kinds of stuff. So it's just been like, I've been trying to keep that one around. I've been making seeds with it and bringing it with a bunch of stuff. And I finally got them out of the woods and everybody's happy. And I'm glad I got it. I'm glad I got
the
trophy.
Nice. It was a happy ending. Maybe it was feeding off of your stress.
For sure.
Like a child.
Sure. It took my energy. That's for sure.
Yeah. It took your life force onto its own. All right, everybody, we got to take a quick break and talk about our newest sponsor, Gorilla Grow Tents. I love these guys. GorillaGrowTent.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you free shipping, and GrowPass members get 10% off plus free shipping. Just go to MyGrowPass.com to find out more about those savings. Gorilla Grow Tents. Are you frustrated with cheap, flimsy grow tents that don't stand the test of time? Well, then you need Gorilla Grow Tents. A group of California growers, designers, and engineers collaborated in San Francisco in 2011 to revolutionize the future of indoor gardening. With thick, durable canvas, steel interlocking poles, easy view windows, industrial strength zippers, and double cinching ducting ports, each tent is safe, smart, strong, tall, odor-proof, stealthy, insulated, and durable, truly transcending the term grow tent. Each Gorilla Grow Tent comes with a free 1-foot height extension kit, and if that's not enough, they have 2-foot height extension kits available, allowing your tent to reach an astounding height of 10 feet. It's the tallest, thickest, and strongest grow tent on the market. Visit GorillaGrowTent.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you free shipping. And when you're really ready to really save some money, go to MyGrowPass.com, get that 10% off for our members, along with over a dozen other cannabis brands. Gorilla Grow Tent also giving away 1 4x8 foot grow tent, a $565 value, to a lucky Grow Pass member. You got to check out the giveaways that we're doing at mygrowpass.com, everybody. We got a giveaway page coming up there shortly, and you'll see all the crazy stuff we're giving away, $5,000 in prizes. Mygrowpass.com, gorillagrowtent.com, promo code GrowCast for the listeners, or get yourself a Grow Pass. Do yourself a favor, get yourself a Grow Pass. All right, everybody, back to the show. I wanted to touch back on something you said, though, when you're talking about aphids and your spinosad treatment. Do you have any other go-to treatments for pests when it comes to, you know, going the all-natural route, going the organic route? I know heat treatment is big for some people, like dunking the root zone in a hot bath or dunking the plant in a hot bath. Have you experimented with that or any other, you know, that sort of thing you'd like to share?
I'm not a fan of like ice water or hot water or anything, any type of shock like that to the plant. The plant, just like you or me, it can deal with a lot, you know, and it's designed to put up with a lot. We just got to give it a good situation to persevere. I like using like, you know, neem seed meal. Is a good thing.
Neem seed meal. See, I'm familiar with neem oil and all the various extracts, but so I've never heard of neem seed meal.
Neem oil comes from neem seeds. So basically when they press the pods or the seed pods of the neem seed, they squeeze out the oil and make neem oil. And then they're left with this shell, you know, with a little bit of oil that they grind down to a powder. Uh-huh. And that's got all, you know, it's got residual neem oil in it. It's got nutritional value. It's usually like a, you know, a 6 on nitrogen. It's like a 6 something, depending on what it is, but it's nutritionally, you know, viable, feeds a lot of different microbe communities.
Oh, cool.
And when the bad bugs are eating roots and things that have that azotinactin or azodiractin or whatever that's the active ingredient in there,
the
when they eat that, it makes them sick. They don't want to eat anymore and they die. So, it slows down their reproduction. And it kind of keeps everybody at bay. So if you use a little bit initially, it, you know, you pretty much don't have a lot of an infiltration, you know, unless you're you know, gifted something, you got to deal with it. You pretty much can keep things at bay that way. But other than like a little bit of like neem seed meal and, you know, using the spinosad dunk on the roots, I try to not even use, you know, use the spinosad dunk on the roots if I couldn't. And I wouldn't have probably done that if, you know, if it was my own situation and it wasn't rock wool. But I know that spinosad will kill all chewing insects and mites and things like that. And as long as I'm not spraying it and we're not smoking it, it's not dangerous in that regard. So it's just a beneficial bacteria that way. So I chose to use that. It didn't even work for me in that regard. So I probably wouldn't go that route again if I was in the same situation. But having just a good biodiversity, using a lot of microbes. If you're a microbe buyer like Recharge or Mammoth Tea or something like that, I find that having a lot of that around, like, you know, a Mammoth Pea here and there will really invigorate your root system and rapid root growth. So whatever any insects are doing to you, if you're worried about that root issue, you're replenishing them tenfold quicker, you know. And if you have like rove beetles and, you know, some sort of a beneficial insect population, you know, that helps a ton. I mean, that just keeps everybody at bay, and you can make clones and get rid of your losses. But I would rather not like shock them or like really try to destroy the situation, because anything you do is going to hurt your microbial communities you're working so hard to build, or I am anyway. And that always causes that kind of, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So I'd rather manage it and then get a healthy clone out of it and get rid of the situation than try to deal with it with chemicals or shock or any of that stuff.
Yeah. And that's something I haven't thought about in a while, which is that heat treatment is probably actually more viable on a synthetic situation when you're not relying on the microbe and the bacteria. But it seems to me like if you really build the health of your organic plant, like you said, you're just not going to even need to bother with that stuff most of the time.
Exactly. You can kind of push through, and as long as you make the right decisions, keep things clean, you can get rid of it, you know, managing it.
Whereas in synthetic grows, it's like a constant presence. If you live in some of these grow communities, it's just like a constant battle with pest issues of one kind or another.
Exactly. Well, you eliminate all the relationships, and then you're left with all the sterile duties, and we don't speak plant and microbe nearly as good as they do. So it's better to have the symbiotic relationship, talking and protecting and doing things, turn off those stress beacons so that it's not pissed and calling for problems, you know. So I'm a big believer in just trying to have relationships, you know, co-plantings and microbes in life. And I think that's the only real way forward in a sense. We're going to do this the regenerative way.
Nice. You know, to help. I love it. Well, I've seen the shift, man, just starting this show 4 years ago, how few organic growers were I was encountering, you know, kind of exploring the space, looking for interviews, and the shift that's occurred in the past 12 months, 24 months, 36 months is insane.
Yeah. 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 It's very, very pleasing. Like, I've been trying to do this like my whole life with fruit trees, teaching people, you know, finally seeing some other cats come to the table, and like with this cannabis thing, I'm like, yeah, like I remember years ago I was working in a commercial cannabis situation as like a water boy and a helper. And they were growing it the old fashioned way with, you know, all the growth, like, you know, boosters and, you know, contaminants and
all the parts
and all that money, you know. And I'm like, hey, let me have a table of the organic stuff, and we should really move this way because this is where it's going to be one day. And they kind of laughed at me at that point, but it's funny. I wish I could talk to them now, you know, I really do.
Yeah. I've been saying it for a while. And the only reason I've been saying it is because you see it happening in other industries. You see it happening in the food we buy. And now we're more conscious about the clothes we put on their body and the sustainability of how is that thing made? So I think it's just we're all headed in that direction, not just when it comes to food. Yeah.
But absolutely.
Another thought that just occurred to me is you're probably best off growing organic for any grow competition, especially one that doesn't tell you the proclivities of your plant, because if a synthetic grower picks up that dog walker, chances are they're going to overuse nutrients, because at least the OG strains that I've had experience with are so finicky and such low feeders. Yeah. It's like you almost guarantee to shoot yourself in the foot there. Whereas if you have a nice, healthy soil, it's not going to overload any given strain, right? As long as it's balanced and not like way over hot.
Absolutely, man. If you got, you know, I mean, now these are pro growers, or most of them are pro growers, so they got their system in place, and you know, some probably didn't miss a beat.
Right, exactly. That's a good point.
That is what it is. But yeah, a lot of the time, I mean, you don't know a stand, or you don't know it needs a little bit more calcium here, or you know, wants more nitrogen there, or you're trying to hit it with the same thing. You'll get one that gets pretty pissed off, and you'll screw up its response, or you'll slow yourself down, or you'll,
right,
you know, just, you gave yourself enough time and you grew one or two of them beforehand and had some practice, you'd have definitely a better result. But organic gives you such a buffer. I mean, you're, like I said, you eliminate the jobs you have to worry about. You know, you let nature do the jobs that she wants to do for free, and then you worry about the important stuff. You know what I mean? So it really is a lot more.
It's the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot more efficient.
Yeah,
sure.
That's awesome, man.
Sure.
Real quick, before we wrap it up talking about family tree seeds, give us some product names. You mentioned Mammoth P. Colin Bell's been on the show. He's a badass. That company seems really, really awesome. Are there any other companies out there you like what they're doing? You like the direction that they're headed in?
You know, the Malibu Compost, you know, Dr. Colum or Calum, I can never pronounce his name right, but I like those people. They're good cats. They know what's up. They like to educate in the right way.
Great.
I really respect that stuff. I also like, I like people who are like Dragonfly Earth Medicine, people who are conscious about the planet and what we need to do to kind of fix it, and who are willing to share the information in the right way, you know? So I'd say Dragonfly Earth Medicine, Malibu Compost, you know, booze blend stuff, and
nice.
You know, Mammoth P, you know, people who are, you know, they got information they can share and try to help this, you know, natural way forward.
Yeah, this like kind of renaissance that's taking place it's interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
But let's round it out with your work, man. Talk about Family Tree Seeds at Family Tree Seeds on Instagram. Everyone can find you now. You're building out the website as we speak. Feel free to come back on, or we'll shoot an Instagram post when that site is up. But tell
Excellent.
Us what's going on, what you're excited about, what the site is going to look like.
Well, basically, I'm an organic seed maker, and I like chasing cannabinoids. So I'm not your typical high THC guy. I love those things, and I have those things, and I'll never lose those things. But I like to search for those outlier funny
nice.
No-show plants.
Yes.
You know, so I like lots of, you know, CBD to THCs and 1-to-1s and 2-to-1s and, you know, 30-to-1s, and then I like trying to find some CBCs or CBGs and, you know, all that other funny stuff that just really hasn't been found yet. And if it was as soon as I get enough money and I get a good lab together, and get all my ducks in a row, that's my goal, is to be a cannabinoid chaser and find those oddballs, sort them out, and make them available and more powerful than they've ever been before.
I want to
kind of chase those other things, which is nice. You know, everybody can chase what they want. I like chasing those kind of new things. I hold a couple of things like the Pam Anderson, which is a kind of a rare cut from the, well, it's not a cut, but it's a rare plant variety from the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. And I've saved and I found in bag seed, and I planted this years and years ago, and it turned out it was something special. I kept it around. And then then I had it genetically mapped so that I could figure out kind of who she was and what she was related to. And it kind of came back with nothing. So she was lost to prohibition. And that doesn't mean she's not related to anything. It just means they haven't ran a lot of the data, or enough of the data, to figure out
right.
Who she really is close to. But it is a rarity to find something that's not really connected to everything else, which is nice.
What kind of traits? Talk to me about that plant. Is that a big yielder? Is that flavorful?
It is. I don't want to make it sound better than it is, but it is, it's a, one of my favorite plants of all time, man. It's a great yielder. If you put her in the ground outdoor, she'll get, you know, 8 feet tall, 9 feet tall, easy, you know, with little effort, and you're walking away with 2.5-3 pounds every time.
Sick.
With little effort, if you do it that way. If you run her inside, she's pretty quick to finish, which is nice too. So you can you know, about the end of eight weeks, right around, so that's 7.5, 8 weeks. I've cut her down all the way in the middle of week six, from six to nine.
Nice.
And you know what? She, you know, little differences here or there, but she's enjoyable every single time.
That's great.
She turns purple and pink no matter what the temperature.
Oh, wow.
About week six, you know, week five, somewhere in that realm, she starts turning colors. So she's this gunmetal blue, kind of a thinner leaf, more sativa looking leaf thing, but not super thin. But she's like this gunmetal blue color. Like,
I love that color.
Things. And then her buds are that color as well, like the silver gunmetal blue, full of frost. And then about week five or toward, you know, as soon as she gets some plumpness to her, she starts turning colors. And you start getting these blacks and blues and pert pinks. If it's real cold, she'll turn black. She'll be straight black. And there's pictures on my Instagram where you see it's just black nug. If she's in warm weather, she'll be purple, pink, gunmetal blue. Really cool plant.
And you're releasing to that one, or is that one you're holding on to?
Well, I've got an S1 right now that I'm running through and kind of looking through her family line, seeing how perfectly stable it is and all those things. But I've made a lot of crosses with her, you know. So I've made a cross with my that I call my Orchard Lady. And that's a citrus farmer assorted male that was just a resinous, super resinous male that I found out of a whole big selection that I call Mr. Frosty. I plunked him into the old Pam. I have a CBD Skunk Haze male,
nice.
Which is a 2-to-1 male, which is awesome. I plugged that into the Pam. That's called my Martha Stewart. And you get some that look just like Pam that have like, it's like a 15 to 18% THC to, you know, 2 to 7% CBD in that realm. And it can flip too. And you can get a really high CBD one. And those ones come out looking like pot, they like smell like pineapple, which is completely different than what Pam is. And those are the two main phenotypes. So you got like a Pam phenotype with like a, you know, a heavier THC with some CBD benefit. And then you got the other one, which is like pineapple and high CBD, you know, which is kind of cool.
Mouthwatering.
And then, you know, I've been plugging her into everything that I can to try to keep her line around because nobody has her. And I'm trying to get her spread around as much as I can to every friend and family member that'll take her, you know. So
that's awesome.
Pretty soon her S1 or an S2 or a stabilizer, I'm working on cubing her. So I'm going to go all the way and try to make her a stabilized variety. Or something really close to a stabilized variety for so that I can reach that to everybody so they can kind of grow what I grow, you know, instead of finding something different. But that's in the future for sure.
That's great, man. I love it. So keep an eye out for that, everybody. And you can go to the Instagram page at Family Tree Seeds. Before we wrap it up, let me just ask you something here. As a geneticist or a breeder, you know, you're messing with these strains. If you had to pick what excites you the most about a strain that you have bred or just a strain that you see that's special, is it seeing a monster yield? Is it the visual colors? Is it the aroma? Is it the flavor? Or is it the high? Which of those, you know, if you hit it out of the park, excites you the most?
Well, just like fruit and everything, we always shop with our eyes. So
that's a good answer.
You know, we first and foremost, she's got to look like, you know, look the part. You know, if she doesn't look the part, I'm not going to turn away. I'm always going to be interested because I know what plants are capable of. But on a general person level, she's got to look the part. So
got to have the aesthetic.
Exactly. She's got to be shiny. She's got to be colorful. She's got to be, you know, she's got to smell nice. But after she looks the part, she's got to bring the effect. So I don't care about yield. I don't care about, you know, the terpenes. I care. That's third on the list, I would say, when it comes down to really most important to me on that side. And I find getting some other things in line first, your terpenes will come, you know, especially with growth techniques. So I think that she's got to look good. She's got to make you want to pick her up. And then she's got to lay the hammer on you so that you're like, damn, I don't ever want to lose this.
Like that.
So those are my number one and two.
Yeah, sure. And I guess desirable effects is different. Looking back, you know, when I was younger, it was definitely like, how high can I get, like potency, you know what I mean? Like strength,
totally.
Not even the effects, just strength. And then as I, you know, kind of became like more of a connoisseur and had more of a, you know, like deeper relationship with cannabis, then I started to realize, oh, there's all these different effects. And I liked exploring different effects, kind of like what you're talking about, cannabinoids and that sort of thing, different blends. But now yes. I'm all about that flavor, man. I feel like as a consumer, like, because I've had so many, especially these live resin cartridges. I've had so many and they're all so good. I just want to try the next tasty one. I'm always like, what does this one taste like? What does this one taste like? Have you found that other consumers, maybe other breeders, are really focused on flavor and aroma as well? I mean, obviously, everyone has been forever.
I think that's the thing right now.
It's on the rise.
It's the lemons and the cherries, and it sounds good and it tastes good. And that's what's going to get people hooked into the loop, you know? So that's definitely, like, I think one of the more predominant things, that and potency, you know, are probably the most important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I found that I do a lot of like vaporizing. I use a PAX vaporizer a lot of the time.
Oh, nice. Now is that the PAX era, or is that the one you load yourself, like the PAX 3?
Load yourself.
Those are the best.
I'm not a big fan of like cartridges and all those other things. I'm very old school, snap a twig, we're going this way type of guy. And getting me to be a vape, you know, use a vape, it was kind of difficult. So having just a something I can load with my own flower or load with my own rosin or whatnot, I find that anything that I can put in a vape, whether it's, you know, a Volcano or a PAX, that brings the flavor.
Totally.
You know,
and the extracts too.
It's tough. You lose that. But I think that, you know, if more people did a little bit of vaping, you can find some flavors and things you never knew were there, you know, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And also, there's such cheap concentrate now. It's cool to be able to, like, just pack it up in your packs and try all the different kinds. I'm over distillate since I tried these live resin cartridges, though. It's a whole other level. And then I just had Pure Pressure is the company. Eric Vlosky is his name, and they make a solventless rosin cartridge.
No way.
And it's like really expensive, and it only comes in a 0.5 gram, but he says that the process is getting better and it's going to get cheaper, and that's what people are going to be smoking on.
That's the real deal right there. That'd be the thing that would get me to go, you know, take a couple cartridges, you know, for sure.
Cool.
Because that's, you got to have that balance, you know, taking stuff and separating it and putting it back, and it's just like, man, it's so disrespectful to the plant for me.
And I hear that a lot on this show too. I totally sympathize with that, and I try to stay impartial as possible because I like to have everybody on my show. You know, I've had Big Mike from Advanced Nutrients off my show, and I've had Tad Hussey from Keep It Simple Organics. I want to talk to everybody.
Absolutely, but it's the only way we get anywhere in life. You know, is being open.
I like that.
You know, to other perceptions. You know?
I like that, man. And I have to say, this has been a pleasure. This was a fantastic interview, and you're welcome back anytime, man. If you ever want to update us, you know, or hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Instagram for sure when your website launches.
Yeah, that'll be very soon. Very soon. In the next month, that'll be
cool.
Up and rolling. So nice, it'll be really informational too. So it'll be a lot of, you know, growth information, heal earth information, soil information, strain information. There'll be all kinds of stuff so people can get some cool, you know, real organic information from a guy that's kind of outside the box in another world.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like you've been around the block, man, and you shared some great info today, and we'd love to drive listeners to you and have you back on anytime.
Great, man. I really appreciate you, Jordan. You guys are awesome.
Cool, man. Yeah, of course. Everybody out there listening, at Family Tree Seeds on Instagram, at Growcast on Instagram, find us at growcastpodcast.com. You know, rate, review, share, all those things. You guys know what to do. Thank you all for listening so much. We love each and every one of you. This is Mr. Trees from Family Tree Seeds and Jordan River, signing off saying be safe and grow smarter. Maybe it was feeding off of your stress.
For sure.
Like a child.
It took my energy, that's for sure.